coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody. How you doing today? Welcome, welcome, welcome. Man, episode 73, we are getting ready for episode 75 coming up here in a couple weeks, folks. That will begin quite a bit of pre-recorded coverage as I hit the road. You can see our live schedule here. It's wild to think that we are now on the road as much as we are with events. We've got the Falk Monster Festival coming up. I will be out on the road for work, and y'all will be getting some great content from Michael W. Carter from Ancient Aliens, as well as Gretchen Cornwall from Curse of Oak Island. She will be coming on with some amazing new Templar updates, some really cool new research. We'll also have, in a pre-recorded fashion, Leslie Mitchell Clark, as well as Keith Seeland, and our Falk Monster coverage. And then I'll be back and we'll have live episodes. And as always, every week we've got our live guest followed by a commercial break and then a pre-recorded segment. So we've got some really cool topics coming up for you guys. Tonight, I am joined by Vicky Joy Anderson. We will be talking about her amazing book, They Only Come Out at Night, available at her store, VickyJoyAnderson.com/store. We will be getting into the topic of sleep paralysis. Sleep paralysis as it pertains to not just ancient myth and the whole concept of incubus, succubus, things like that, and old hag syndrome, but how it even pertains to a technological aspect, how they can now replicate the sensations of sleep paralysis in labs, things like that, making you feel as though you are suffering it regularly, and how that might even pertain to the targeted individual community. We'll be getting into that conversation before our commercial break, and then after commercial break, we will be joined by the amazing whistleblower, Dr. Robert Duncan, to discuss the world of targeted individuals, his new app that is coming out, Persons of Interest, that will hopefully help targeted individuals target those targeting or those suspected of targeting. So we'll be getting into some of that, as well as AI and how AI plays into V2K technology, that kind of stuff. Before we do all that, of course, thank you so much to our sponsors, WebWork Wireless. WebWorks Wireless is your home for no data limit, no throttling, no credit check, no contract internet, folks. We use WebWorks Wireless here at Curious Realm to feed our website live stream every week, and it's fantastic. It's top notch. I have yet to have a dip out, yet to have a stop. I have a Wi-Fi network on my phone too, and numerous times that one has stopped, but WebWorks Wireless never has. Stop on by and check them out. WebWorksWireless.com is the website. While you're on the internet, of course, make sure to stop on by Facebook. Join our group, Curious Realm. That is where we post all kinds of articles, have all kinds of conversations. This week, in our news segment, which is brought to you by our Facebook group out of Yahoo.com, Fox News staffers celebrate as Tucker Carlson's departure in pure joy. Out of ABC 13, Southwest passenger met by cops after complaining about crying baby. Out of APnews.com, actor Danny Masterson drug and raped women. Prosecutors say that is a pretty hardcore case if you start digging into it, and going to be pretty big if it comes to bear, because he is, of course, a big member of Hollywood, and specifically Scientology, things like that. So Will Liam shared with us out of Independent.UK, January 6th, defendant opens fire on police in Texas. And out of Discover Magazine, what if Earth hosted an industrial species before humans? That is just some of the news that is fit to print, folks. Stop on by, join us in the Curious Realm group there on Facebook. Of course, while you are online joining our group, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can catch all of the episodes. That's where you can tune in. That's where you can go to our events page and see everything that's coming up, upcoming guests, everything else. But that is also where you can visit our newly constructed store with all of our guest books, including our book from our guest tonight. Where is it? Hey, come on now. It's here, I promise you. I know I added it. It's in here. So, yeah. Stop on by, check it out, curiousrealm.com/store. There it is. They only come out at night. Welcome back to the show. Vicky Joy Anderson, how are you doing?
Hey, Chris. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, thank you so much for coming back on. I always love return guests, especially whenever it's about topics that literally affect me. I am somebody who has been affected by sleep paralysis for probably about the last 20 years of my life. Not nearly as much as it used to be. Probably about 3-4 times a year it happens to me now. It used to happen a lot more frequently, but it's a frightening situation when it happens. And, Let's go ahead and start off. Introduce yourself to the audience and how it is that you came to begin researching sleep paralysis to begin with.
Sure, absolutely. So my introduction to sleep paralysis was on the job training. It started, as near as I can remember, around 3 years old. And it was a pretty regular occurrence until I was about 23. I had a nice little hiatus there for several years, and then it did come back pretty much full force in my late 30s. But I think that the reason why, you know, one of the things we might get into is, you know, what's the target? Why you, especially when you're talking about a 3-year-old, because some people will say it happened, you know, during puberty, or it happened during adolescence a couple times, or it happened in adulthood, you know, during like a highly stressful time in life, like a job change or a divorce. I hear that a lot. So many of my emails start with, I'd never had sleep paralysis until shortly after my divorce. I can't even tell you how many times that I've heard that, because I do think that highly stressful or traumatic situations do exacerbate that. And with me, I had a lot of trauma in my youth. I had a wonderful family, a very stable, functional home, but I was born with a birth defect. So I was in the hospital right after I was born, I was in the hospital for a month before I went home. And then I was in and out of the hospital for 15 years, having pretty heavy duty reconstructive surgery on my face to correct this birth defect. So that's pretty traumatic. And these things like to pick on the vulnerable and the weak and the defenseless. And so I was a child. I was left alone in hospitals a lot. And I was going through a lot of trauma and bullying at school. So I sort of had a big, huge target on my back, I think.
Yeah, it can, especially if you start off, like you said, to the fact of bullying everything else to begin with because of birth defects, that kind of stuff. You can be born into a lot of trauma that way, most definitely. And that can lead to sleep paralysis type symptoms, everything else. I mean, stress is probably one of the biggest interrupters of sleep that we have.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things what I really wanted to do when I wrote the book is I wanted to clear up, if I could, some of the misconceptions with sleep paralysis. And there's a lot of misconceptions inside and outside of the church. So, you know, if you're going into the secular realm, if you're going to a psychiatrist, if you're going to a doctor, if you're going to seek medical help for this, there's a lot of misconceptions. But if you go the religious route and you go and you talk to a priest or a pastor, there's also a lot of misconceptions in that realm as well, which kind of leaves the sufferer confused. They're getting a bunch of conflicting data. And what I really hope to do is like, hey, let's let everybody get a seat at the table here. Let's everybody who has something to say about sleep paralysis get a seat at the table. Because I think what a lot of people do when they study and research this particular topic is they go into their own little echo chamber and they get to say whatever they want, and it echoes off the walls and it sounds beautiful to their own ears, but it's never, their work and their research is never cross-checked by other people who might have other facets of the diamond to bring to the discussion. And so what I try to do in the book is bring history, philosophy, psychiatry, world religions, whether it's Christianity, whether it's New Age, whether it's a cult, I try to give everyone a seat at the table, because I don't think we're going to fully put the puzzle together until everybody comes with their pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, much like any of the conversations we have on this show, when you're talking about something that is paranormal outside of the norm, a lot of people are very uncomfortable talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I know we got into it last time you were on the show. My experiences with sleep paralysis, whenever they first started, I went to my spiritual director.
Right.
Catholic priest, known him for years, knew him before he was a priest. and zero instruction. There was no acceptance of my experience. It was, Chris, there's no real teaching on the experience that you had. You know, I think you probably just had some disturbed sleep, something like that. And, you know, he had a therapy degree. That's mm-hmm. that's what he was in addition. But it was, yeah, it was strange to me to, especially the visceral experience I had of, only thing I could describe it as, Vicky, was a shadow person grabbing me at the foot of my bed. And trying to pull itself on top of me.
Yes.
It was one of the more frightening experiences of my life.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And unfortunately, because we've been exposed to so much of this kind of imagery in the media, there's so many horror movies now that people are sort of desensitized to it. So when you tell someone like, no, this is the scariest thing in the world, they're like, a shadow appeared in your room. It's so anticlimactic because they've seen it all. Like TV has just has desensitized it. So when you try to explain it to people, they're like, you had a bad dream. It was just the moonlight playing on the walls. It was like they have all these ways to, you know, unintentionally gaslight you, which is really what they're doing. It's like on a good day, they'll just think you're silly. But on a bad day, they'll think you're schizophrenic. They used to lock people up with this, you know, and which is why a lot of people are reticent to tell a professional in or outside of the church what's going on, because they don't want to be, you know, chock full of psychotropic medications. They don't want to be institutionalized. They don't want a bunch of mental illness labels. And what's unfortunate about the church, you know, whether you're talking Catholic or Protestant, they don't teach this stuff in seminary, which is crazy, because the Bible as a whole, if you understand how to read it correctly, if you're looking at the true context, language, history, geography, if you know how to contextually read scripture, it is a powerfully supernatural book. So
indeed,
it's very ironic that the seminaries have stripped the supernatural out of it. But really, pastors and priests are going into this field completely blindsided because they're not given the education and the counsel. So unfortunately, what happens to a vast majority of people that dare confide in a pastor or a pastor's wife with these sort of things is one of two things. And I've heard from people that talk to me, I've heard both of these things happen. Categorically, these are the two most common things. They're either brushed off or they are then kind of given the side eye from that point on, you know, so you show up for church and you see the pastor in the corner with the pastor's wife kind of whispering and glaring, right?
Yeah.
So you suffer
sitting up front again.
Yeah, you suffer from some reputational damage. But the second thing that happens is it's the classic, we're going to have a counseling session, and what have you done to open up spiritual doors? What sin are you hiding? Let's dig to the bottom of the barrel. Every time you looked at porn, did you play with the Ouija board? Are you faithful to your wife? And once you lay every single deep, dirty, dark secret out on the table, they still don't really have an answer, you know. So you go home and you say some Hail Marys, or you say Jesus forgive me, but it persists. And so it hasn't helped you any. And now, you know, the pastor knows all your business. And in the end, you walk away feeling like this was my fault. And I'm not saying you can't open spiritual doors. Absolutely.
Sure you can.
But there are a lot of people.
You can open them without a Ouija board.
Yes, you can. So this is a multi tentacled issue. You can't, it's not a one size fits all. Yeah. Every single Christian or Catholic or religious person that experiences this, it's because you did A, B, or C sin and confess the sin and then you're good. It's far too complicated than that. There's all sorts of other things at play, like stress and trauma, genetics. It can have to do with bloodlines. It can do with whether or not there's a history in your family of generational Satanism, if you're a targeted individual, if you're in a military family, if you're of a particular elite bloodline, if you had Masonic or secret society ties. There are so many openings to this. Trauma, as we mentioned already, sexual abuse. So to just assume that every guy that walks through your doors of the church that has sleep paralysis is, you know, got a porn addiction is just extremely narrow-minded.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And, you know, there are numerous traditions, once again, of sleep paralysis. And whenever, especially when you're talking older cultures, going back to Judaism, things like that, where we pull a lot of our demonology, that kind of stuff from.
Yes, true.
This was one of the things that could be suffered from sins of the father, that you could be basically stricken with the old hag.
Yes.
So, yeah, the idea of bloodlines, once again, it may not be you that caused it. It might be great-great-granddad or a great-great-uncle somewhere along the line, something like that, that did something or put this on the family.
Yeah, made vows. There are certain secret societies which, when you are initiated, you pledge your entire bloodline over to those gods. And it's not just you, you know, and your family knows nothing about it. You're sworn to secrecy, but those ties are binding. And there are other ways that we can covenant and make vows, and a lot of times unwittingly, because these things don't always play fair. Go all the way back to the first time a human being was ever duped, as documented in the scriptures. Adam and Eve, they were tricked into that. They were seduced. And so trickery is in the playbook. And a lot of this stuff is greatly poo-pooed here in the United States because, you know, we're civilized and educated and sophisticated, right?
Yeah.
And we don't have time for these little ghost stories. But let me tell you a cool story of someone who wrote to me early on. I think it was last July. This was a missionary who I believe worked in West Africa. And he said, and we're talking 21st century here. This isn't some, you know, 1950s story in a dusty missions book in your church library. This is relevant, recent email from a missionary to West Africa. And he said that to this day in certain regions in West Africa, the children there are taught to never receive a gift from a stranger. So if a stranger comes up to them on the street and offers them a gift of any kind, especially if it's food like an apple or a piece of candy, they're never to accept anything from a stranger. And he went on to explain that what happens is the child can receive this gift. Let's just use apple as an example. They take the apple, they eat it. What happens then within the next couple of nights is they have a sleep paralysis like experience. It's a dream slash astral type experience where this stranger shows up then in the dream and demands the gift back. And the child is unable to pay because he's eaten it in most cases. And so the child is then frightened to a frenzy, you know, all the horrible things that are going to happen to him and his family if he can't return this gift. And so the child becomes into heightened levels of fear. And so then the stranger, the kind stranger, offers a bargain, a wager. Oh, there's one way you can pay me back. You can pay me back instead of giving me the apple back. Will you give me permission to live in your house? And so the child, who's afraid and has no other option, agrees. And this entity then, this astral entity, now has been given legal rights to the home. And now he has access to the entire home. And again, this stuff sounds odd in the United States, but this kind of stuff goes on all over the world to this day.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, whether it's Baba Yaga in you know, Russian and Eastern Europe, witches in Western Europe, these stories are all over the place. I mean, that's exactly what the story of Hansel and Gretel started out as. So, right. Yeah. And to know that these things, once again, can go back in family line, can come from something that you didn't necessarily do. How can you break that cycle, Vicky, if it's something that you didn't even give the consent? Somebody else gave the consent, but there's got to be a way to break that cycle, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. There are ways. And I do talk at length in chapter 6 of my book on how to not only break these vows and covenants, but how to avoid being duped into them to begin with. But I have some appendices in the back of the book that have some prayer mapping exercises where you can pray to get to the source. Because there are so many people, Chris, who email me who have spent years to the point of exhaustion trying to come up with the source, where they're praying and closing every door they can think of and getting rid of all of the stuff in their house that, you know, has a symbol on it. And there's a point where sleep paralysis, years and years after it's ceased to even bother you, it can put a person in bondage, and it can exhaust and wear a person out trying to come to the bottom of it. And so there are shortcuts to that. You know, the Spirit of God can reveal to you the source if you ask and if you pray. And there are ways that you can pray. And in fact, online, there's some great websites that offer prayers for breaking covenants, like breaking Masonic bloodline covenants and breaking soul ties. That's another huge one, Chris, is soul ties, where we have these unhealthy attachments, whether it was a former spouse, a former girlfriend, a former friend, that was unhealthy, and we're holding on to those things, that they can also keep doors open. Basically, negative energy, and I don't want to start sounding all new age.
Way too late, honey. On fair. Both of our counts.
That's fair. But if you
say that all the time, though.
I'm talking mostly Christians. Christians, like, they get triggered. They get triggered pretty quickly, and rightfully so. They're taught to be good Bereans, and they should be. But if you prefer the word heightened human emotion, then we can talk about heightened human emotion. When you are holding on to anger, bitterness, lust, fear, terror, this is like a magnet. This is like pheromones to these things. Okay. So when you are sitting there after night, you know, getting buzzed on your one glass of wine because you had a stressful day, and then you just sit up all night furious over the guy who dumped you in high school and whatever, you are just creating a pathway straight to your door. You're a neon sign for these things. All of this unresolved trauma and these heightened emotions. So obviously one of the ways that we can close doors and break off these covenants is to take control of our spiritual, physical, and mental health. I mean, just taking care of our bodies and working to heal our traumas and to forgive other people, forgiving the people that have hurt us. It has nothing to do with justice or that they were right for what they did.
No.
It has to do with getting the target off of your back. I've even worked and dealt with deliverance ministries that talk about how targeted individuals can escape remote viewers or astral projectors or witchcraft or spells against them. The number one secret is that if you forgive all of the people that hurt you, it in the spirit realm actually breaks their power. It's like they have a two-way communication device. Yep. When you choose to forgive them and let it go and heal, it breaks off the two-way communication, and they lose you. You go off the radar.
But it's not renting the spare space in your mind, literally.
Yes, exactly.
Which I mean, and you know, I especially when you're talking something emotional and psychological, I hate to put it in terms of winning and losing, Vicky.
Yeah.
However, the only way you can win that game is literally to surrender.
Yeah.
That's it. And to say, like, yes, admit your complicity in the cycle.
Yes. Yes.
Because you have to say, like, yes, I have been complicit with this. I've been okay with it. I haven't changed my life. I haven't done what I need to do. And it's hard to do that. And it's really hard whenever, these circumstances are popping up and hitting you, and especially, targeted individuals specifically, it gets fully, fully overbearing.
Yes.
To the point where people cannot work, cannot live. Yes. And it's hard. It's hard.
It's tragic. And the targeted individuals that I've talked to, they're in a worse spot than the people who have demons after them. With demons, you can easily shut down a demon because we've been given authority over them, and they fear the name of Jesus. They fear the blood of Jesus. They fear not being feared. And there's so many, it is so easy to shut down a demonic attack. It is extremely difficult to shut down a human attack, because human beings have a free will and they can do whatever they want. So you can cry out to the name of Jesus. You can do whatever you want. And if you've got an evil, nefarious human being on the other end of your, you know, line there, they're not going to easily give up. So I have great amounts of empathy for the targeted individuals, because now you're not just dealing with something potentially demonic. Now you're dealing with technology, militarized technology. You're dealing with just quantum levels of, they have figured out the brain chemistry. They've got all of the neurology figured out. They've got ways to replicate all of this stuff. And the thing is, when you've got a system, you know, with switches and plugins and computer programs and all this, you can't just shut them down by saying in the name of Jesus. And in fact, I've had experiences myself, and I've talked to many people who have had, I call it SP 2.0. It's a sleep paralysis 2.0. They have come up with ways of replicating the sleep paralysis experience, where instead of demonic entities, they are avatars. and they're soulless. So you can say, get out in the name of Jesus. And they just stare. They just stare right through you. They don't react. They don't laugh. They don't hiss. They don't scream. They don't go away. They just stare right through you, because this is not a demonic entity anymore. They have now bypassed that. And they've created these avatars, these soulless avatars. And it really is brilliant what they've done, Chris, because they've figured out a way to continue tormenting people. Because most people, even non-religious people, have figured out that if you say, Jesus, help me, it'll often go away. UFO abductees have figured out the same thing. Too many people figured that game out. And so they have actually bypassed it. They've come up with the loophole. And maybe not so much Gen Xers, of which I am, or baby boomers, but a lot of the millennials and Gen Y and Z who are experiencing these astral and sleep paralysis type experiences now, they are not dealing directly with the demonic entities in every case. They have got these avatars and these hosts and these AI things intervening on behalf of the demons, because they're impervious to the weapons that we have, like the name of Jesus, etc.
Yeah, and you know, once again, it, whether or not you believe in Christ, it's interesting to see the fact that calling upon his name, and I think it's really more of like an instinctual grounding.
Yes, yeah, it's so true.
At least I think what it would do for most people is, at least by saying it, it would summon another image into your head that is familiar. Whether or not that offers relief or religious relief, whatnot, it's enough to break the cycle of what's going on with you.
Yeah.
Thought-wise. Yeah. It's enough of a hiccup thought-wise to kind of reset that biological machine going on.
Yeah, I like that. You know, and I just want to make it clear to anyone who's listening who, you know, is a follower of Jesus, I am not saying that the name of Jesus is ineffective. At any point when you call on him, he can be there in a flash to help you. What I'm trying to explain here is demons know that they are subject to him. And so they obey him for fear of being thrown into the abyss if he shows up. Whereas a holographic image that's not really there, but it is, if I scream at my television set, it's not going to talk back to me, because it's an inanimate object. It's a medium, you know, it's there as a medium, you know? So what I'm saying is, you can holler at a hologram, but that hologram is not going to have the emotion of fear over what you've said.
Yeah. It's not gonna have the fear response.
Yes.
Everything else. And, you know, that brings up a curious situation, Vicky, because not every sleep paralysis session, let's just say, is old hag.
Correct.
Or is even a dark entity at the end of your bed or sitting Correct. Next to you or going like, hey, what's up? My name's Pete. not my demon's name, by the way.
It's not. I love that.
It's Scott.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, because the sleep paralysis that we're talking about, and the sleep paralysis that will be the most familiar to anyone probably 50 years or older, that is already becoming somewhat outmoded. So when people write to me, just by telling me their sleep paralysis experience, I can with pretty good accuracy tell you what generation they're from. And it's what's interesting is, when I talk to baby boomers, and you'd be surprised how many people in their 70s are contacting me. When I talk to the baby boomers, it is the scariest crap you've ever heard in your life. Like, it is beyond science fiction. You start talking to the Gen Xers like me, and this stuff is really, really scary. But then you start talking to the millennials, and it's a little bit of the old school stuff. They'll see like the woman in the rocking chair and the black mist in the room and things like that. Then you start getting into the Gen Y and the Gen Zers, and they're talking about reality shifting, metaverses, exploring the metaverse at night, the DC Marvel universe, the Star Wars universe, the Harry Potter universe, and sure. like putting scripts under their bed. And it's highly accelerated, modern, lucid dreaming. But they are being lured by honey rather than vinegar. And, you know, we were kind of joking before the show that the sleep paralysis that the baby boomers and the Gen Xers experienced, the younger generations do not have the fortitude to handle that kind of trauma. The younger generations have not been taught how to be resourceful through trauma. They've been taught almost to just break down at the slightest bit of trauma. And so they, and by they, I don't mean the Gen Y and Zers. By they, I mean the entities and the groups and organizations behind
the offenders,
they understand that they're going to lose their audience if they approach the new generations the same way they did the old generations. And so they are leaving a far sweeter breadcrumb trail to far more delightful parts of the astral realm than, you know, we went into the dark abyss parts of it. We saw the shadow people, the demons, the glowing red eyes, the alien grays. We saw these were the abductions and the terror, and we're going to drag you to hell. And the younger generation is getting more of the, you can be as a god up here. You can be whatever you want to be. You can be Harry Potter. You can be Thor. And so to them, it's just this virtual reality adventure.
Yeah.
And they have no idea of the ball and chain that's being put around their ankle while they're asleep and not noticing because they're having too much fun exploring. But with all of these astral experiences, and you know, whether you're talking sleep paralysis, lucid dreaming, astral projection, ayahuasca, whatever it is you're talking about, there's a shelf life to how long it is before the euphoria and the honeymoon period wears off. And, you know, the people that are doing all the marketing for these things, they're the ones that are fresh into it, or they're the people that have been doing it for many years because they are serving a great purpose for the offenders. But for the average person, the honeymoon phase wears off. And if you talk to someone 2 years after an ayahuasca trip, or, you know, 3 years after years of astral projecting, you're going to get a much, much different vacation brochure story out of them than the people that are still titillated in the first hits free, as they say.
Well, yeah. And I mean, not a lot of people realize the full on issues that come with, I guess, the psychonaut experience.
Yes.
What can become of that? Yes, most of it is pretty benign. Some of it, though, can lead to wild places. Even myself in my work with lucid dreaming, stuff like that, which is where some of my issues started. I'd had night terrors and issues and sleep paralysis before that. But I had numerous sessions of sleep paralysis where it was not, at least as far as I could tell, not demonic in nature.
Sure. Yeah.
Not like, you know, wild adventure or anything like that. One of them specifically, I remember this was when I lived in Maine. And I'd been working like crazy, you know, to the point that I told my boss one day, who owned the club, I worked at a club running sound at night and worked at a country club running all the vending during the day. Same boss at both. The guy who ran the country club, food and beverage, was the guy that owned the club that I ran rock and roll sound at. And I told him about a dream that I had one night where, I was sitting in the sound booth and a guy came back by with a golf bag and asked for a hot dog and a beer. And he was like, man, you're like combining your two jobs together in dreams. Like, you need to take a couple days off. At this point, I was literally working 7 days a week for numerous months. And I went to a beach house that my girlfriend's parents had rented, got all my stuff unpacked and just kind of laid down. And about 20 minutes after I went to sleep, started hearing my grandfather playing the accordion and singing. And I was in a library, and I looked up and I couldn't find the music. And I was looking all over the library for the music, and I looked through the window of the library, and I could see the beach outside, and I could see, like, my girlfriend Jen and her mom out there while I was still in the library and hearing my grandfather play. It was one of the most visceral things in my life, where I was literally in the midriff between being awake and asleep.
Yeah.
When I came to, Jen was waking me up because I was apparently calling out in my sleep for her. Because I couldn't get through the window. I could reach the window, but I couldn't get through it. I had numerous things like that happen. Where as I woke up, I was awake, could not move, could not speak, and the dream was still occurring.
Yes.
Like, as Jen was there in my room, the library books were there, and my grandfather was still playing. And that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I think, too, what a lot of people who suffer with sleep paralysis on a continual or regular basis might not realize, a lot of times when people suffer from sleep paralysis, they remember and they rehash the terrifying episodes. They talk about the shadow people and I can't move, or there was the old hag on me, or whatever. But I think what a lot of sleep paralysis sufferers may not realize is that much of their dream life is a little bit off. Much of it's odd. A lot of it is lucid. A lot of it is spiritual. A lot of it is astral, but not all of it is scary, terrifying. And so I think that's another misconception about sleep paralysis, is that it's only when those scary things happen. Because I'm really glad you mentioned what you just did, because I can talk just as long about all the times I've had dreams where I've woken up and there's been nothing scary or frightening or demonic about it, but there was definitely otherworldly elements to it. There was definitely communication going on in that dream that was, you know, an average dream is fragmented and somewhat nonsensical, and it jumps all over the place, and there's not a lot of cohesiveness to it, and you don't really have a full inner monologue in the dream, and you don't necessarily have control over what you're going to say or what you're going to say next, or you don't necessarily have a lot of knowledge of who the other people are or where you are. Whereas when you're in these other types of dreams, which I would still classify as sleep paralysis, but they're not terrifying, they're not demonic in that sense, but you're having entire conversations with people. It's cohesive, it makes sense. You're thinking, you're fully formulating sentences in your brain before you speak out loud. And when you wake up, you know, as a writer, I can tell you there, I have so many dreams where I could write it exactly as I dreamt it and it would be a novel. And there's no missing pieces, perfect cohesion. The scene changes all match. There's even, like, I call them Seinfeld endings, where you have all these dreams that seem like fragmented, and then at the end they all come together and it's like perfect bow on top. So I do think that's another thing too about sleep paralysis, is the scary stuff gets all the press.
Yes.
And the sexual stuff gets all the press. But the fact is, there are a lot of times where I think we are not really just in our beds asleep at night, but we wake up and we've either forgotten all of our dreams, so they're missing, or we remember them and just think like, oh, what a nice dream, or oh man, that was a cool dream. I mean, isn't it interesting, Chris, maybe it's just the friends that I hang out with, but most of us, you know, we'll get to work, and if we've had a dream that is worth sharing, we're sitting there with our coworkers. I had this dream last night. And it's very strange considering how guarded the average modern American human being is. We don't necessarily go and tell everybody our business, but we'll go and we'll easily share our dreams with people. Yeah. Oh, I had this dream. And that's extremely vulnerable data, you know? And so I do think that even without realizing it, we all do have a sense that there is some deeper meaning or purpose to this function.
Yeah. And, you know, as we kind of wrap our time with you here, Vicky, it's one of those that how do you get somebody to, I guess, begin to understand that, A, they are dreaming. And B, find something grounded to pull them out of that dream.
I'm not gonna lie. It can take years of practice. There are things that you can do. You know, it's interesting. There's clues to this in media. Like in Inception, he had that little spinner, you know, he had the little top. And as long as he had that top and he could spin it, he would know he was in the right reality, you know?
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I've learned to do, and it took me years to figure this out, because here's another aspect of sleep paralysis that's very clever. When you're in terror, you lose detail. Think about when you're in a car accident and then the cop shows up with what happened and all of a sudden, you know, you can't remember what color that car was. You didn't check the plate. You didn't know if it was a man or a woman driving. Like, it's just crazy how when our adrenaline is going, we lose our ability to scan for detail. And so when we're in heightened levels of fear in a sleep paralysis situation, we're focusing all of our energy on how to wake up. We're not really paying attention to the surroundings. But one thing that I have noticed, at first I thought it was just a rare peculiarity, but now I've noticed it's in every single one of them. When you have these sleep paralysis experiences and you believe that you are awake or half awake in your bedroom, if you scan your surroundings, you will always find one thing in your surroundings that is not true to reality. There will be a door on the wrong wall. Mm. There will be a window that's not really there. There'll be a piece of furniture or something hanging on the wall that's not yours. If you look out the window, the scenery might be different. There's always a glitch. And they give this away in the first Matrix movie when Neo is in the jump space in the hotel and he sees the black cat come around and they say it's a glitch in the Matrix.
Yeah, deja vu.
Yes, the deja vu. And that's when I put it together that the reason why I'm always seeing something wrong is that at this point, I'm not really awake in my room with my eyes open. Because if my eyes were open, I would see accurately. And so I believe that in some cases, it's an overlay. And you are probably in the astral or some other dimensional space of consciousness at that point. It might be something to do with the pineal gland. It might be an overlay over your pineal gland. But if you can have the fortitude in fear to fully scan the surroundings and look for something that's off and train yourself to cue yourself that if something is off, I need to wake myself up. With enough training, you can learn to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I get, once again, for a long time did dream work. I don't remember a lot of my dreams anymore. I also don't frequently go to sleep with intention.
Yeah.
Like I used to.
Yes.
Used to be, I went to sleep with a mission.
Yeah. Like, yes.
I had a task to do and homework to do while I was asleep. And now I much prefer the needed actual just rest and decompression. but I still glean a ton from my dreams, from what I do recall, from what I do remember. I build boxes like water over my shoulder in my dreams. And my wife will be like, "What'd you build that for?" And I'm like, "'Cause I saw it." So apparently I need it.
I love that. I'm really glad you mentioned that, Chris. What you're saying is, like, I used to go to bed on a mission and now I just rather sleep. You know, depending on who I'm talking to and how dire their situation is or how frequent it is or if they're a targeted individual, what I say to people where this has only happened to them once or twice, they've had a sleep paralysis episode, curiosity killed the cat. And I think if it only happened to you once, let it go, because if you start obsessing over it and reading everything you can on it and doing the dream journals and this and that, what you seek, you will find. And there is a point where I think you can actually bring this on unnecessarily. So it's one thing if it's happening to you night after night after night and you're not doing anything to desire it. And, you know, especially if it's a remote viewing situation, a military situation, a targeted individual situation, whether it's occult or military, that's one thing. But if this just happened to you once or twice, I would suggest not over exploring it to your own peril.
Yeah, because I mean, much like, sadly, so many targeted individuals that I talk with, their mind becomes utterly preoccupied with it.
Yes.
And once it does, you are literally falling into that cortisone trap.
Yes.
That they want you in, that state of constant panic, that state of constant fear, that state of constant unease, is what makes your brain, your spirit more hackable.
Yes.
In that way.
I love that. More hackable. That's brilliant. Yes.
Well, it's mainly because you are distracted. You aren't focused on the task at hand.
Yes.
The more coherent your thoughts are, the harder they are to break up. Prime example is, you take a nice coherent light like a laser and put it in front of a prism and it just bounces.
Mm.
It doesn't split apart.
Yeah.
Like white light. It doesn't scatter further.
Mm.
It stays coherent.
Great analogy.
So yeah, it's interesting. Before we let you go, one last question. Where can people go, Vicky, if they've had these episodes, if they continue to have these episodes? Where can they reach out to for help? Because as we said, I'm not going to say don't go to your local pastor.
Right.
You know, you may very well have a pastor that is open of mind and, you know, like we said, may not be the one that believes it's your sin or the sin of your grandfathers that made this happen, you know?
Yeah.
But where can people go to find help for this?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, I spent most of my life trying to find someone to go to and ended up having to do the research and write the book myself to find the answers, because they aren't really out there. Now, as disclosure continues, more and more of this will be resolved. More information will come out. We're sort of allowed to talk about this now without throwing people into psych wards. Anyone who wants to can contact me. If you go to VickyJoyAnderson.com, the contact page, I answer all my emails. I do counseling sessions over the phone, Zoom or phone, whatever anyone likes. But I would just, you know, I hope this doesn't sound like a shameless plug, Chris, but one of my visions for this book, one of the desires of my heart, is that pastors and priests would become learned in this area, that they would realize it's not just spook, it's not just woo. And so what I
would say, it's not just for your, like, regional exorcist.
Exactly. This, like, isn't the kind of thing that a ritual is going to resolve. If there's an open door, a lot of times the rituals that we do in the church just invite these things further, that it's more of a conjuring if you're talking to these things. But with that said, if you suffer from sleep paralysis, and my book is helpful to you, when you're done reading that book, give it to your pastor. Get this book into pastors' libraries, into the church bookstore. We've got to get this information into the church. And I believe, just given the response I've gotten from this book, Chris, this is something that is relevant to many, many, many professing believers. And I think that now that the doors have kind of been opened, more people are talking about this. There's all kinds of podcasts out on this now.
Yep.
I think that we have entered an era. Hey, everything else gets to come through the church doors now. We get to do yoga and meditation and all this other stuff. So why not get this information into the church? So if you're out there and you've suffered and my book has been helpful, or you think it's logical or it's sound, then please hand it off to your pastor. Get it into your pastor's library. Let's start equipping our pastors and our priests to
absolutely.
Maybe they couldn't help you, but maybe you can help them understand it, and then they can help the next person.
Yeah, my challenge would be is if you know a man of the cloth, buy it for him for Christmas. Buy it for him for their birthday. Stop on by and check it out, folks, because it really is some mind-blowing information. And whether you... Here's the funny thing. Same thing that we talk about regularly with Nathaniel Gillis whenever we're talking about the Molters and this race of spirits that has bounced from human to human via literal consent, the same mm-hmm. way that we are talking. You don't have to believe in them.
Mm.
That's cool. They don't care.
Right.
That makes 0% of difference mm-hmm. to them because they are playing by a different set of rules.
Yeah.
And that consent can be given in so many ways, yeah. and through so many guises. So, yeah, I want to thank you for exploring this topic tonight, especially with the concept of a technological bent to it and using the concept of sleep paralysis as a means of control for targeted individuals, things like that, Vicki.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the direction my research is going. I hope to have a book out on that as well, because that is the direction that these experiences are going.
Wow. Wow. I definitely need to get you in touch with our second guest, who will be coming up after this commercial break, Dr. Robert Duncan, but also Dr. John Hall. I think it would be interesting for y'all to compare and contrast research in the world of targeted individuals and technologies and how they affect people. So
I would love that. Love that.
Thank you so much for your time tonight, Vicki. Before we let you go, one last time, let everybody know where they can go to get your book, where they can go to keep up with everything that is Vicki Joy Anderson.
Absolutely. You can find me at VickiJoyAnderson.com. And if you click on in the store, you can get The Only Come Out at Night, as well as my other books. You can also get me on Instagram, Vicki Joy Author. Would love to see you over there.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Vicki Joy. It was fantastic having you back on the show. I can't wait to have you on again and again and again. So,
oh, awesome, Chris. I so appreciate your having me on. I love our talks. They are always great.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be sharing links to this tomorrow after everything comes out. You have a great evening.
You too, Chris.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Man, always interesting talking to Vicki Joy Anderson about the world of sleep paralysis. Once again, it's been a long time since I have had an episode of sleep paralysis, but if you are a sleep paralysis sufferer, folks, if sleep paralysis is something that affects you, stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website. CuriousRealm.com/story is the page that you want to visit to share your sleep paralysis experience with us. You can share sketches. I know, like, I have a couple sketches. I should find the sketch of the shadow person that used to come to the foot of my bed. If you have sketches about your experiences, things like that, stop on by and share them with us. CuriousRealm.com/story is the page. We will share your experiences and evidence with our guests like Vicky Joy Anderson, as well as our guest upcoming after this commercial break, Dr. Robert Duncan. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels.
From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that commercial break. Thank you so much to our sponsors out there, especially True Hemp Science. If you are here, actually, doesn't matter where you are, scan that code right there. Stop on by, vote for our sponsor, True Hemp Science, in the best of Austin voting right now. They are up for one of the best CBD companies, and I will tell you right now, as somebody who travels the country and got CBD all over the country looking for the right product, True Hemp Science is amazing, folks. Stop on by, check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart over $50 while you are online checking out everything from True Hemp Science. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is, of course, where you can find all the episodes. That's also where you can find our store full of books from guests, things like that, especially guests like our guest in this segment, the amazing Robert Duncan, author of How to Take a Tame a Demon, as well as Project Soul Catcher, and as well as Decoding the Matrix. So welcome back to the show, Robert Duncan. How have you been?
I've been great. I've been enjoying life, but, you know, fighting for humanity's sake.
Always. And, you know, you are one of the many people that I see championing a lot of causes on social media. One of them specifically is just the cause of knowledge, period, and the unrestriction of knowledge when it comes to things. We are up against so many things in our society right now, Dr. Duncan, and one of them is AI. I'd like to read a couple of short little segments here from ChatGPT. I'm not going to lie, folks. I have purchased ChatGPT plugins to play around with them, see what they're about, things like that. And I decided, since we were having Dr. Duncan on tonight, somebody who is a progenitor in the world of artificial intelligence, machine learning, things like that, I was like, let's feed Dr. Duncan and the topic of targeted individuals into the machine and see what it spits out. So on targeted individuals, a targeted individual is someone who believes they are being targeted by a group or individual for harassment, intimidation, and or malicious activities. This can include surveillance, slander, stalking, and other forms of psychological and physical abuse. Dr. Duncan is a physicist, author, and entrepreneur, founder and CEO of the Vector Institute, author of the book The Matrix Deciphered. He is a leading expert on artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and the future of technology. He's been featured in numerous publications, including New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Forbes. That last part, Dr. Duncan, literally reads like a speaker profile at a conference, my friend.
Yeah, it does. And the interesting thing about ChatGPT is that it's always learning. It needs more and more information, but it's not necessarily accurate. What it's doing associative memory across sort of the internet space. And so part of what it said about me was true. The other part isn't true. And that's okay, but it sounds so professional.
Let it roll, man. Take every bit of it. Hey, quite a bit of it's true. Don't get me wrong. Like, machine learning, Forbes, all kinds of stuff. Like, you've been listed in all kinds of publications, you know, and you really are, once again, a progenitor of this kind of technology. And I wanted to have you on because we're up against an interesting foe with this, if you want to look at it that way. you know, it's literally out of the bag now. There's nothing we can do to put the technology back in the bottle.
That's right. It's a Pandora's box that has been opened.
Yeah. And prime example, last week we had Billy Joe Kane from Radical Imp, the Education Foundation, on, and we were privately talking about ChatGPT functions, things like that. And some of the things that we were seeing it pull and cull were remarkably accurate. Number one, like I literally had it write like 5,000 words on human trafficking prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could have submitted it. It was pretty incredible. And one of the things he was telling me about was a function similar to ChatGPT for Zoom that's free, where you can go in, it'll transcribe all kinds of things. And he was like, I don't know why this thing is free. And I was like, number one, never forget, you're the product if it's free. What they are getting is vast, untapped resource for their machine learning.
That's
like
right.
Immediate real time. We're talking different languages being spoken. We're talking accents speaking English from around the world. The rapid way that a machine can learn when given that unbridled input. Literally, I think of it in terms of short circuit, you know, input. 'Cause that's what it is. Like, it's just raking in data and learning at an insane pace.
So how do we teach it to look at us as good pets rather than as the enemy?
Yeah. Oh no, that is a concept that I know we've talked about before, both privately and on the show. The idea of, you know, not a question of if sentience happens, but really when sentience happens. Do you really want it to find out that we've been using robots for menial tasks and for, you know, sexual companionship, things like that? Like, you want to know how it ends up really the Matrix? And it's like, you're a disease. You don't deserve to be here. Like, that's how it happens. Let's start making more sex bots, people.
Yeah. Let's look at how we've treated people or animals that we look down upon. It's going to look down upon
It will be no different. And that is a frightening reality, you know, that we really have to consider that, and not necessarily that it would even be going awry, but to the point of, literally Ultron from the Disney movies, you know, where it's like, well, I'd love to say that you guys deserve to stick around, but obviously, things have evolved beyond you now.
Yeah, you know, and you bring up a very deep question of we're a hubris species. You know, the world revolved around Delphi, and the sun revolved around us, and we were the only species in the universe, and we're a very arrogant race, and so. Do we actually stop evolution, even though we're its father and mother and creator? Do we stop it for a potentially superior race? We all want our children to be better than we are, even if we're outdated with our knowledge and skill set. So these are some of the questions humanity needs to talk about. Do we go forward with this and hope for the best? Do we try to control it, enslave something that is going to be greater than us that might backfire? Or do we teach it love? Do we teach it the good qualities of humans that we want to, you know, go into the next species or the next utopia, whatever it may be?
Well, and a prime example of that, I'm bringing it up right now. It's just Google. Twitter bot goes racist. If you remember, a few years ago, there was the Twitter bot from Microsoft. It was an AI chat bot that was put out on Twitter. Its name was Tay. And Tay was basically the intellectual, whenever Tay launched, was like the intellectual equivalent of an 8 to 10 year old.
Yeah.
You know, but rapidly began learning and rapidly began learning, basically calling information from conversations on Twitter. And it within a week, had the intelligence of almost a 20-year-old, but it had become literally a racist bigot. Like, I know, shouting hate, all kinds of things.
That's art representing our society. And, you know, do we really want to create our future AI god, and I'll call it a god or demigod, to actually represent us? We were created in the image of God. Now, do we want our God created in the image of us? And these, you know,
that's revealing.
There was another AI experiment, and I may get the companies wrong. I think it was Microsoft also, but anyway, they created two chatbots, and I do this in my experimentation all the time. And they created their own language, and that scared them. They're like, well, if we don't know what's going on and what they're talking about, we get paranoid. We think they're plotting to take us over, and which they might be. But the point is, we're a paranoid race, and we can't have these AIs speaking in tongues that we are not or a neural language we are not programmed to receive. You know, it's a dangerous area for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it really does, once again, bear the fact of if God is created in our image, do we really want that?
Yeah.
You know, because most people, Doc, as we've explained numerous times, live in a cortisol overload, live in a state of fear, live in a state of didactic control of paradigms.
But that's on purpose and by design.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I mean, we have numerous documents, you know, go back and, you know, look at Operation Monarch, all kinds of things, you know, even the plan to put CIA operatives into live media, you know. Not one, by the way. I would be in a much, much better pad than this.
Yeah.
But
you're not one.
No. Good God, no. Believe me. Although I can pass a presidential security background check. Don't get me wrong. Like, I've put microphones on presidents, all kinds of things, you know.
Wow.
But yeah, I couldn't pass that kind of background check, man. No. I have way too much, let's put it this way, and honestly, I have way too much of a library file.
I'm reading your dossier now.
if you go back to the days of the 80s when they were keeping track of what people read in libraries, like, yeah, even to back then. I posted a thing on social media actually today about it was an ad that popped up like invest in American air superiority. And it was about, like, you know, drones seeing in the dark and going supersonic. And I was like, I don't think your algorithm's on point right now. I've been throwing, you know, whistleblower rhetoric at you for 2-3 years now at a minimum. Yeah. This is not what I would invest in.
I know, but maybe they'll call you controlled opposition.
I could see that. And I mean, you know, a lot of the reason that I wanted to start off with this topic with you is, A, it's in the news, it's everywhere. But it really does set up for some interesting things in our society and some interesting extremes. I mean, even right now, the extreme of banning books, things like that, where it's like, man, we are two steps away from a public burning of them.
I know. And I'm sorry to cut you off.
But no.
It is such an important topic to me.
Yeah,
the freedom of speech, the freedom of knowledge, the freedom of exchange of ideas, and to watch this go down, a ministry of truth telling us it's shutting up doctors and other experts about certain topics and not letting the free flow of ideas. That is such dangerous thing that we've witnessed in history many times before, and it's happening again in our lifetimes. And that I will fight to death to maintain the freedom of speech in my doctrine, of my country, of my land.
Yeah, I am in my heart and soul Voltaire, doctor. I may not agree with what you have to say, but I will fight with my life for your right to say it.
Exactly. I'm exactly.
And yes, it is a designated control of thought when you start doing that. The minute, and I don't care what you religiously believe, what have you, folks. The fact is, the minute you start reducing the choices of reading materials, you have reduced a choice, which means you've reduced America.
Yes.
Period.
Perfect.
You've tried to distill what being American is, and that's not really what it's about. You know, the choice. Like, imagine if you woke up tomorrow and just couldn't get a copy of the Quran anywhere. You know, been deemed unworthy. So now religion is suppressed because reading is suppressed.
It's a slippery slope.
It is
going. And that's why I say the enemy is within, and it's sort of works on multiple levels. It's us, our own mind. It's our politicians. It's our culture. We've lost touch with what we really should value.
That once again, why I wanted to bring that up is because this is such a touchstone topic for the work that you now do. As a whistleblower, as an advocate for targeted individuals, for those that are targeted, because once again, there's a swath of people that another swath of people want to completely disbelieve, despite evidence to the contrary now existing. And even like you said, trying to squash doctors, even those that were searching for answers medically for Havana syndrome, doctors were being discouraged from talking about it.
And one of the CIA doctors, while he was searching, was hit himself.
Yep.
But the news media and the powers that be squashed the story. I mean, it hit CNN partially, but... people believe their hypnotube and not alternative media.
Yeah.
And it's a sad state of affairs when voters are supposed to be our collective conscious, our intelligence, the best form. And when they are being lied to or not given the right information, all the information lies through omission, the voter cannot make correct decisions.
That's right. That's right. Because, I mean, without the educated decision, it's very easy to just follow the stream. I mean, and a prime example would be ask most people who their local representative is. They probably can't tell you, though, the fact they voted.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Most people either vote straight ticket or vote incumbent.
And that bothers me. I know it's a problem with our political system and we need to change, but no one's strong enough. No one's selfless enough to get voted into Congress or otherwise to make the necessary changes to better our system rather than a binary decision of two choices. And that's it. And, you know, it's the lesser of two evils that we vote for. And that's That's not optimal decision making in mathematical terms, in terms of a collective intelligence.
Well, I was going to say, keep going. Keep going.
Oh, well, you know, and it's I have a lot to say about it, but there should be an IQ test, a character test. There should be a whole bunch of things
that are awaited
for the I mean, I can prove it mathematically for an optimal outcome. And we're so locked into our ways and traditions, which is fine, and make sure that all this is understood and gets passed through, you know, the correct ways through the system to change the Constitution's voting system. But it has to be done because we are going down a hole that we are not going to come back from.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And as we talk about regularly with Dr. John Hall, unfortunately, especially whenever it comes to targeting technology, any kind of it's going to come down to legislation, you know. A prime example is what's going on with UFO UAPs right now. Despite whether what we're seeing is, you know, A technology being tested against B technology, what have you, whether it's enemy technology, whether it's extraterrestrial technology. What has happened is that there has been a conversation opened in the halls of Congress. And a valid conversation. One that all but 5 years ago was a ridiculed conversation, Doctor. One that if you brought it up in public assembly, you probably would have heard laughs from the public gallery as well as the voting floor in Congress.
Okay, very true. Very true that there have been small victories for other ideas.
I hold out hope.
Yeah.
I hold out hope because what that's done is, and yes, now we have an annual hearing and an annual report, which, yep, means more government money right there. Right there into it and right into the black budget programs that are there to investigate and everything else as well.
But of it is the wolves investigating the hen house?
Yes. Yes.
What kind of answers should you expect?
well, yeah. And that is a prime answer because the example I give regularly is, feel free to go ahead and tell me any time that the CIA hadn't lied to Congress. I'll wait. You know, because just about any time that they've been called to task before panels that they are answering to.
That is what they do.
Literally, that's what we pay them to do. Do you doubt that? Do you need more proof? You had to drag me in here so you could find out I was lying to you. That's what you paid me to do. You know, but at the same token, what has happened is now there is a unified system of reporting amongst systems of the military and amongst civilian systems. And hopefully, at least now, and it, you know, all things considering, especially the molasses way that the government tends to move, Duncan, we have had pretty rapid recognition of Havana syndrome.
I've seen them backstep as well.
Oh, sure. I mean, all of recently they were bringing up the crickets again.
Yeah. And I make fun of that. I admit the cricket theory doing brain damage. Okay.
Yeah.
And these are our best government scientists.
That's some hardcore crickets, man. That's some big crickets. Yeah, exactly. And then we've had that conversation with Dr. John Hall since the day that theory was floated, because first it was crickets, then it was the insecticide to kill the crickets. You know, it's been down so many different
And then channels. Snake weapons, which I understand they might come to that conclusion of what we call resonance weapons or cavitation in the brain caused the brain damage and et cetera. But what really bothers me is You know, I worked on a lot of these weapon systems, and this is all known. You know, the DARPA scientists like myself cannot talk about it because we're under, a non-disclosure agreement and an oath, but you can find it in all the CIA libraries and military libraries that this is well known of what we are capable of and what we can do. We are just trying to keep it out of the eye of the public and of the, I guess, third world countries to catch up. No. Well, so, yeah, it's very disheartening to hear it and know the truth, but to watch how people are being programmed, you know, to question.
Well, let's get into that real quick, because once again, sadly, the technology to hijack brainwave is not incredibly rare anymore.
But you don't hear about it on mainstream media.
No. Like you don't. And it's funny because you would think that MIT scientists being able to literally communicate with people in their dreams would be like, hey, welcome to the late show. You know, like that's like a Johnny Carson level science interview. Like that dude should be sitting next to Jack Hanna.
Absolutely. This is the most important breakthrough in conversations humans should be having right now. Their very soul, if you will, consciousness can be altered and can be manipulated and passwords stolen through dream interrogation techniques and et cetera, et cetera. And nothing, just silent crickets.
Well, let's don't have crickets in there. We know what that can do. But even recently, hold on, new documentary about John Lennon assassination.
Yes, I study programmed assassins.
And you know, that it is more and more coming out that, the man that assassinated John Lennon may have well been programmed.
It's an old, CIA's been working on this way before even MK Ultra, but that's the one they're known for. And MK Ultra is, some say it's a German word for mind controller, and others say that is just a classification, a secret classification. But nonetheless, my senator from Idaho was famous for the church hearings to bring all of these, the oversight committee to pay attention. And they've never done their jobs. I met with the oversight committee and I think it was 2007 with the head of the LA FBI, and they played dumb or were dumb. I don't know which it was, but that's why I don't do politics, legal anymore, or personal affairs, is I realize it's all rigged.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got bitter, I suppose, about our system.
Yeah, and it's, I was trying to find the part in here. Right here. He could Whalen questioned Chapman's own recollection of the night's events. Quote, he could not coherently understand why he felt compelled to shoot John Lennon. Chapman did not remember pulling the hammer or aiming, said Whalen. All he could remember was a voice in his head saying, do it. There you go.
Yeah, that's the technology. Voice of God weapons. Controlling people's emotions and thoughts that we've been working on for a long time. It's the ultimate political and war weapon.
Yeah. And I mean, it goes on to literally talk about the doctor from the CIA who was like, no, through MK Ultra, we showed we could utterly program an assassin. Like all day.
All right. So now let's talk about what purposes would it serve to kill, like John Lennon, or try to shoot President Reagan, or assassinate JFK, or what? This is called social engineering, and it's how to make people react. So a lot of the shooters you hear about on television, a lot of them hear voices. Well, let's lock up crazy people, whatever the reaction is, or take away guns. And so it could be as a mechanism of disarming America so we can't overthrow a tyrannous government. I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, when I first came across this, I just brought it up, Aaron Alexis, the Navy Yard shooter who had, this is my EPG, his electronic gun. My EMG is what was carved on his gun.
But, oh no. Yeah. ELF.
ELF. Yes. ELF. And
stands for electric, low frequency.
Yeah.
Electromagnetic low frequency. And that's what we use to communicate with submarines deep down, but it also is what our brainwaves operate at.
Yeah.
So that was his point. He worked for the Navy. The Navy has this technology, has the greatest budget amongst all the armed forces. And so he kind of put two and two together. His actions were clearly wrong because these people he shot have no clue what they're working on.
Yeah.
It's compartmentalization. And, you know, it's sad, but he made a point. And the major news stations, just like the Myron May shooting, kind of covered it up. And unfortunately, I was mentioned in his suicide note by cop. He never tried to contact me, but he was trying to make a point that I'm willing to give up my life to bring media attention to this atrocity, these silent tortures and assassinations, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just it. There is a whole world of this until Aaron Alexis. That's when I was working on broadcasts. I had known about MK Ultra. I'd known about numerous programs that involved similar type of technology that were declassified, things like that. But it wasn't until Aaron Alexis that I learned about your work and the work of Dr. John Hall and the world of the targeted individual. And in the same year, there were at least a good three. One of them was the poor single mother that ended up being shot by Capitol Police or by Secret Service, rather.
I remember that.
Who heard the voice of Obama in her head telling her to do things.
Yes, and that's important. If there are targeted individuals that are listening to this broadcast, do not believe the voices of God, so to speak. That's the weapon classification in your head. Yeah. It is not those people. We use voice morphing, and which is now broadly accessible technology, along with deep fakes, to trick the target into assassinating or harming the wrong person. And they need to know that. You can't believe your senses anymore. They've been overthrown.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And I'm bringing up the new Adobe tool right now, which this was a few years ago, that after 20 minutes of listening, a new Adobe tool can make you say anything. And that's that. All they, for instance, all they'd have to do is grab 20 minutes of me from my show, put it in there, and then they could type in anything they want, and it would be indistinguishable. It would have my inflections, everything.
And this is what the NSA does, the National Security Agency, or no such agency, depending on what you want to believe. But they've been collecting samples of all voices of all humans throughout the world so they can throw those, like a ventriloquist. And that's the danger of government not truly having oversight. We accept that in war. We did it to during Desert Storm. You know, this is all a throw down your weapons, and they believed it. And you can say, well, it causes less bloodshed. But now, if you really want to manipulate a particular target, innocent, in order to be an information courier or whatever. The CIA does a lot of tricky things, and the disclosures there from the 1950s and 60s. This is the perfect tool to do that, and innocent people and families unfortunately suffer the brunt of something they will never be able to get justice for or even know who is behind it. And that's what saddens me. I at least want them to know. They'll be angry. They'll feel betrayed, all that. But they can get over that with an apology from a future president for what this president's doing, kind of thing. Sure. And that's how they all do it. You know, Obama, I'm sorry we tortured some folks. Well, he didn't stop it. We still are, you know. And
yeah, so yeah.
President will, you know, say down the line, well, I'm sorry, during his administration, we were torturing folks, too, you know. And it's just the game that's played in politics and the news media.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the questions that I probably get asked more than anything, Doctor, because it truly changed my life and changed the focus of my show even before we rebranded. When we were Dudes and Beer, there were two causes that we were behind 110%. Human trafficking prevention and targeted individuals. Because the day that I had Dr. John Hall on the first time, I got a page and a half long email from a targeted individual in Israel who went into one of the most heart-wrenching stories I have to date ever heard. And I hear them regularly, probably more than anything else as far as listener response. I hear from targeted individuals.
Yeah, I do too.
And it breaks my heart.
It does. It's heartbreaking. But I also get positive messages.
Oh, sure.
Of, you saved my life. Without the knowledge you gave me, I would have committed suicide or harmed somebody. So I know I'm doing good works by being on radio and TV and writing books and everything else. But the mainstream media and the the leaders of politics, shame on them for not trying to save lives too and telling the truth. You
know? Well, and not seeing it as viable. And once again, hopefully I have faith in the fact that at least we now have something called Havana Syndrome.
It's something. It's misnamed. But
sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Misnamed and very specific things that you have to look for it to be Havana Syndrome, as far as white tissue brain damage, things like that. However, I think what it will do more than anything is possibly open up a dialogue.
Yes.
And hopefully lead to some kind of standardization of reporting. Much like the UFO UAP thing, at least what happened now is if a Navy pilot says, hey, I saw something, he's encouraged to say he saw something.
Yes.
Not discourage and like, we're going to take your wings if you come tell us you saw something.
That's right. That's right. No, that's right. You got to change the culture.
Yeah.
And as well as the vocabulary. There are words that we have to create and concepts around them in order to communicate them with other humans. And you know who you should have on your shows? Dr. Len Baer. He's one of the few civilians who...
I'll look him up.
...has been diagnosed with Havana Syndrome. Now, of course, they say in government... we're going to give disability and help those who have Havana Syndrome. But, you know, those are government employees. We don't believe it's happening in the civilian sector. Yeah. And again, that's denial. And if they knew the truth and the numbers, it would bankrupt America. So they cannot go that far as to admit.
Let's get into that real quick, because that's what I was leading up to, is probably the biggest question I get is, why me? Why me? I am not a government employee. I have never held a red stamp confidential job in the government. Like I don't even have a college degree. Why me?
Yes, well, that's exactly why you have no voice. You're easy to experiment on. That's what our country, unfortunately, has done in the past. It was mostly on minorities who had no voice and no one would believe them or care. But now it's totally open. It's all walks of life and segments of society, and that's what you need to train the AI, the probability matrices, both in language, culture, and everything else for the outcome. Most people can't accept you were randomly selected. They don't like that answer. They want, I did something wrong so I can change my behavior. Well, no.
Yeah. Great granddad was in the first Airborne or something like that. And that's exactly the reason.
They're trying to find a connection, and a lot of them will say it's their neighbor, or I went to a doctor or dentist and they implanted me. And that's, if you read again the CIA manuals, that's called false flag. The same with why I don't like the name Havana Syndrome is because of the Operation Northwoods. We were trying to trick Americans that and attack ourselves and our civilians and our military. It was denied, thank God, but in order to get public support for a war against Cuba.
Oh, and yeah. So
I view this as the same thing, why they called it Havana Syndrome. Oh, the Russians are giving them secret technology, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think that's a big part of it is that, A, there's a huge part of plausible deniability there. They've definitely learned, especially whenever it comes to experimentation, they've learned a lot about systematic experimentation. They had enough issues after Tuskegee. They had enough issues after MK Ultra became public and other programs similar. I mean, heck, even the newsreel videos of soldiers, like, just outside a blast radius of nuclear bombs in trenches, you know? But those were all people that, once again, either signed a document with the U.S. government saying, hey, yeah, the first time I remember it in my lifetime, Doc, was Gulf War. When they were injecting a bunch of soldiers that were going over in preparation with something that.
Yeah. And so what happened? We got the Gulf War syndrome. They tried to isolate it to a contagion of a plasmid.
Yeah.
Which is a type of viral weapon. And, you know, maybe they helped a few families that they believed. Very similar to what we're experiencing now with the Venice. But most of them are discredited and tossed away.
Yeah. Well, and we at one point, Cody Snodgrass, we had Cody Snodgrass on. He was a whistleblower. I've yet to be able to retrack him down. And even the gentleman who introduced us has not been able to find him in years. But he was in the middle of writing a book about the Oklahoma City bombing and the fact that he was offered $1 million cash to blow up the Murrah building.
Wow.
Because inside the Murrah building was the medical office of the U.S. military that held all of the documentation for Gulf War syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And once again, don't know, hearsay, conjecture.
Exactly.
But never been able to find that dude again. He has vanished.
That's the problem with primary sources. So many people, for example, ask me, cite the source. And I'm like, I am the source.
I am the source. Yeah. Feel free to read the patent. And no offense, doctor, but there is a swath of people, especially inside the community, that once again have a small kerfuffle with you because, yes, yeah. Unfortunately, your name is on some of these patents for things. And once you found, and once again, when you're working in a research lab and you are heads down and you're being given funding and you're being given just an end goal, you aren't being given the fractal look of how they're going to monetize, weaponize, things like that. They're just looking for, hey, we need something that does this.
Yeah.
So you make a technology that does that. Doesn't matter if it's stealth technology, what have you.
And they motivate us through nationalism and other methods that, you know, when you're young, you're just like, yes, defend my country. And they make you proud of what you're doing, but they don't tell you, you have to kind of piece it together of that, oh my God, and that was my realization, my eureka, my technology is being used on my own citizens, and that's why I came forward. You know, that's just wrong, and I still can't justify it today, no matter how hard I try.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, once you found out, you couldn't, there's no way you could reconcile it inside your head to keep doing the same thing.
Yeah.
At least not toward that end.
Yeah, not towards that end. And I'm glad you said that because all technology is neutral, blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely.
And it's just, and I'm a proponent of knowledge progression in a culture that is wise enough and mature enough to handle it. I'm not sure if our culture is there. And maybe we release technology too early for this culture, and it may cause its own demise. Mm. And so that's one of my concerns. And I do many things to try to inform and better people. I'm writing an application called POI, Persons of Interest, and it's because of a phenomenon in the public that I want to study. It's there's a group that they call, and pardon the language again, it hasn't evolved properly, but gang stalking or organized stalking. Mm. So let's call the organized stalking. You can read about this, and I think the book Confessions of an NSA Hitman and other people who've worked for the government, that we do use intimidation tactics to change countries, leaders, people's opinions of what they're going to say. COINTELPRO by the FBI was another example of that. And I want to find out if this is true or not and put these agents out of business, whether foreign or domestic. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So my application does facial recognition of a private database that targeted individuals can snap photos of people stalking them, maybe damaging their car. Now, what we'll find is mostly nothing. But if we do find a commonality of a face in different cities or different countries, then we know they're an agent and that they're doing it. And now this brings up a whole slew of privacy issues and other things. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. But unfortunately, we need to know the truth. And so, in a sense, I'm turning people into spies in order to find spies, you know.
Sure.
And so I think it's justified, or to find out this is a delusion and it's caused by paranoia. But the point is, I'm a scientist. I need to know the truth. So I'm giving them the tools in order to find out this map worldwide, where it's happening, what's going on, to try to make them feel more empowered for their own security and safety, and to capture those involved. Now, my real focus is on mind control technologies and other things. So it may turn out this was just a mind game that was being played with all these people. They're still targets, and it's all real in their perceptions. But I need them to come up with their own conclusions, given my technology. And the government shuts me down, they shut me down. I spent, 6 months creating this software. We'll find out where it goes. Maybe we'll find criminals for hire, and I'll turn it into a bounty hunter program, and everyone can make money off of turning in tips, to pay for the database and application. There are a lot of ways to take this. But my inception, exactly.
Yeah. Last time we had you on, we were watching the video about the Mind Monkey Network, all kinds of things. And that's just it. People do not realize, really. And they've realized for a long, long time. I mean, even the work that you did and are doing right now, goes right back to the work of people like Dr. Hal Puthoff.
Yeah.
Because they have shown that you can utterly influence people's decisions at a distance, all kinds of things. And when you're talking about a mind monkey network, that means if you can influence somebody, you can influence the person next to them through the person that you're influencing.
And that was a so-called DIA conspiracy, not conspiracy. It was a document written in the 1970s that the Russians had plans that if they could control 10,000 people in the U.S., they could control the direction of their culture and society.
Oh, yeah.
And that's true. And that's the way we do it in the consulting business is you find people who will champion the ideas, and the followers will always, Operation Mockingbird mock their opinions. And you can take over a country by less than 10,000 people. We do it in sales. Well, we got to get to the decision makers, we do it in politics. We got to find out who the influencers are on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, our actual government does this if they're in power to manipulate other less strong-willed people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've got up on screen right now from NPR about the Revolution 2.0, how social media toppled the dictator. We never did find the guy whose profile started the big call against Hosni Mubarak.
Yeah, but I...
Who was like, let's all meet in the public square and overthrow this dictatorship.
Oh, it all goes back to the CIA.
Absolutely. I mean, Facebook got its first round of funding from InQtel. They are the public funding arm of the CIA who literally looks for these technologies. And that's the prime example, Doctor, is that it did not take the greater majority of the people to come out and overthrow Hosni Mubarak in Egypt.
Yeah.
It took like 5-10%.
Yeah.
It didn't take like the great majority of people. So you don't have to influence everybody. You don't have to make everybody hear the voices in their head to turn the tide of things, things.
Yeah, you're right. And I like quoting a Pentagon document that I read. I don't know if it's secret or not. I don't think so.
We'll find out.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But anyway, they said... you can falsely imprison and torture, blah, 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 up to, I think it was 3-5% of the population of any country before a successful revolution. After 8%, the rest will decide that they are in the right and not interfere with the revolution.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting. I think they were talking about the Vietnam War. But,
and a prime example is even our revolution.
Yeah.
Less than 20% of the standing populace of the United States took place in that. The rest of them were like, you are a crazy person. Please stop. Please. Like, afterward, they all lived in the comfort of that crazy less than 20%. But until then, they were crazy people. Stop what you're doing, you know? Yeah. And that's just it. It doesn't take a whole lot to push even a targeted individual to the point of panic, disruption of sleep, disruption of life, things like it doesn't take a 90% people. It takes a 5%. Disrupt 5% of somebody's life on a regular basis and see what happens to them.
And again, I got to go back to that freedom of speech. When people tell me, shut up and be silent, that just makes me want to talk more.
Yeah, no, same. Makes me... makes me want to buy more websites.
Yeah.
Well, because truly and honestly, and this is what I explain to people, you may not think that the internet is one of the last bastions of truly free speech. Feel free to visit somewhere like Korea. Feel free to visit somewhere like Africa where they don't have unrestricted access.
Oh, yeah. There are many countries.
The way that we do. We are very, very fortunate.
We're getting closer to the Chinese model, and that scares me. Facial recognition in airports. I worked on, biometric facial recognition as well. And I'm not saying it's bad. All truth will be known, but the mistakes that are made by government for the innocent person to be trapped in one of these scams, that's who I fight for. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Brazil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
Tuttle versus Buttle, one little government error and look at what ensues.
and that's just it. It's very much a convoluted web, especially whenever you're trying to figure out once again, who is behind targeting and why. And that's kind of the idea. No different than the obfuscation of black budgets and why when, senators finally cued to the fact that, wait a minute, there's how many different departments looking into UFOs and you've reclassified them and we didn't even know. And we sit on the panel and we're giving you money.
Unfortunately, our government and our oversight committee, they're pretty useless. We've slowly shifted all the power to the dark side and our government, they can change your taxes.
Like we say all the time with the UFO UAP topic, same thing with this technology. Not that there isn't a use for it, not that there isn't multiple uses for it, aside from nefarious uses,
Let's say
could be ways to change humanity. Like you want a way to really get the true matrix where it's like, wow, I know Kung Fu. This would be the way.
Accelerated education, positive affirmations.
Yeah.
Everyone has they're not lonely. They have their personal Jesus. I mean, there are a million great, applications. But unfortunately, the military industrial complex gets it first.
Well, that's just it. Much like the Skunk Works video that we show all the time about the nuclear reactor, where we have the patents on our website, nuclear reactor that fits inside of an F-16.
Yeah.
Like, it's the size of my desk, man. And when you watch the video from the guy in 2012, it's like the size of a walk-in freezer behind him, like what you'd see in a restaurant. He's like, I can 2-3 generation this every year. By the time I'm done with it, I'm going to need a new career.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, now we have them and they're tiny. We're talking nuclear reactors that they're going to be able to take out in the battlefield, the power stuff. crazy small things that will power insane technology. So until we can monetize it, there's no vested interest in declassifying it.
Okay, that's an interesting comment.
And same thing with this. How are we going to monetize it? Because at some point you have to monetize it to make the money back from investment in the technology.
Yeah.
It's got to ring a dollar at some point, and more than government contractors. Once you get it on a commercial shelf, that's where the real dollars is, you know?
And that is why the television watchers, I don't know what to call them, the general public, are about 30 to 60 years behind of what we currently can do. Yeah. Because we have to test everything to make sure there are no loopholes and the monetization of it.
Yeah.
And runaway processes. Let's say you can stimulate your own brain and have let's use pornography as an example and the real feeling of it. You will just press a button until you stop eating and you die. So it has to be regulated, and we have to look at all those possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have technology that listens to us and crafts our ad experience, all kinds of things. Your phone does it. Your computer does it. Your smart TV does it. All kinds of things. So these AI algorithms, just to loop it back to the beginning, Doctor, are everywhere and all around us. We let the genie out of this bottle a long, long time ago.
Yes, we did.
And just now is it getting to the point of deep fake? Just now is it getting to the point of, I mean, I posted an article in the group the other day about a song featuring The Weeknd and things like that. That they're like, hey, I didn't do that. Wait, that was AI generated.
Yeah. People,
so,
I've studied AI for most of my life, and I would get artists that say, well, the greatest human skill is creativity. You will never be able to do that. And I would show them examples of where they were wrong. We can actually have an algorithm for creativity.
Yeah.
I don't want to say mankind is obsolete, but hold on to your seatbelts.
Hey, just the things that I've seen from my version, I can't even imagine what a real, real, real version of ChatGPT could do, my friend. What I paid for is like a $70 plugin for WordPress, but man, some of the things that I know that are out there as far as AI and what can be done, it's incredible. It's phenomenal. And yes, there are numerous, much like any technology, like you said, the technology is inert. It's just made. It's there. You could apply it for good, amazing, great things and change and advance humanity, or you can use it for nefarious crap.
So when are you going to outsource yourself?
Me? well, and that's just it. Like I sent when Billy Joe Kane was here, and I had it write 5,000 words, and believe me, it took like 20 seconds, and that's it generated 5,000 words on human trafficking prevention that maybe you should go through and cull and edit.
You sure.
But that author that you were going to hire as a freelance writer, you're fired, dude.
You're fired.
That dude that I was going to hire to like write my press release, you're fired. ChatGPT wrote it, and it was pretty incredible.
I know.
Like, it's wild. It's going to shake up a lot of industries. And AI has already shook up the... I said it years ago whenever they came out with the AI that we were talking about from Adobe, that is going to change entertainment contracts. And it already has.
Yeah.
James Earl Jones was the first person to, in perpetuity, sell the rights to his voice.
Oh, no kidding. Well,
so for like 100 years from now, Hershey's Chocolate could use James Earl Jones's voice to voice over a commercial.
How about I'm going to reference a movie called Looker, and where they scan models in. Even the president was fake, and it was just artificially intelligent, you know, software that would model actors, actresses, and even our politicians. And that day will come, and it's something we got to get used to, but it's something I want us to talk about, like we are here on your show.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that people are either too afraid to talk about it or they're too busy to care from day-to-day activities, but this will affect your children's future.
Oh, God, yes.
If you're not part of this conversation, you are letting your children down because something profound, the singularity is happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah, there, and... That is what I've been saying with so many guests lately is at one point Art Bell described it as the quickening, and we are far beyond that quickening now. We are at a roiling point. We ain't boiling frogs anymore.
No.
That point is gone, and our technology has come to a culmination in a head where a huge change is on the horizon and on the very, very cusp horizon. I don't mean like hours of darkness away.
No, I call it the birth of a new species, but we got to recognize it somehow.
It's well, and once again, conversations like this, I love having them with you, Doctor, because philosophy is such an important part of this. It's such an integral part of this. That is where we draw our human ethics from, despite religion. So many people get that capital E ethics confused with religion, things like that. No. Ethics is a philosophy and what is right for human.
Yes.
Period. And, you know, not always is a decision right for all human.
Yeah. But that is why I speak out as I defend our species, humans.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to go away if we don't pay attention, you know, to many topics, but this being one of them.
What do you think are the integral parts for your upcoming software to really work and truly help expose this machine a little bit?
Yeah, no, it may fail, and the reason
it might.
Is that the people that are being tortured and being stalked, obviously they have hypersensitivity, vigilance, and they may not want to be tracked when they take the picture because it requires GPS and everything else. And to meet up with TIs, it's a meetup group. Maybe I'm doing something bad and I'm actually creating a social virus where they're going to organize and stalk their stalkers. And now what if they're not really stalkers, you know? So, I mean, it has a potential drawbacks that I'm considering. And my greatest worry is they just won't use it because they're too fearful. Well, if they're stalking you, they already know your GPS location. Mm. You know, I mean, you can try to reason with them. But it's a difficult population to interact with.
Well, and that's just it. Like, you can cut off location on your phone all day, but if you are using your mobile device to browse the internet for targeted information, you know, sorry, you're ringing through an IP address which has a GPS location.
That's right.
So, like, they can still track you. They can still find you, even if you have your location. And that's not to try to give anybody a cortisol overload or fear or panic. Because really, yes, that is I've gotten a lot of great advice from both you and Dr. John Hall about chatting with these individuals in a very honest and open way. And I had somebody contact me who wanted to contact both of you directly. And I was like, they are both publicly available. I cannot give you their personal contact information. Please understand that. But they are both publicly available on more than one platform. They are both very gracious. Feel free to reach out to them with your situation. But he was wanting to start a show about it, kind of like his own fight back, you know? And I was like, maybe start up a public resource page, like a website, something like that, where you can give some public information to family members who maybe don't believe their targeted family. You know, I was like, but I don't think either Dr. Duncan or Dr. Hall would advocate you spending numerous hours a week thinking about targeting and targeting technology and targeted individuals. And you know, the preparation of doing a show about what you are currently afflicted with, it could lead to a worse situation for you.
It could. It could. I understand where you're coming from, but maybe they're the next producer of Black Mirror.
They could be. And that's what I told them. It's like, I'm not going to discourage you and tell you not to, but it might be something that, you know, just as someone who, like, I'm pretty obsessed with my show.
Yeah.
And to do a show, yeah, it's going to require numerous hours every week and listening to it again later, things like that, it might help you work it out. It may re-traumatize you.
It's
a six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah. And I do encourage people to write down in a diary their experiences and everything else, because it is a kind of cathartic way to, represent the intensity of what they're going through. And it helps some people. It's like talking to a shrink, I suppose.
Sure.
You gave good advice. You got to look at keeping the body alive while you're going through this, and you can't put all your finances into something you can't afford.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And energy into something that might tax you even further. Yep. You know, your energy needs to be spent on good, constructive things, going out, getting exercise, learning guitar, things like that.
That
help build serotonin in your brain.
Sure. Those are self-improvement methods, and I agree with that fully, but I also encourage them, if you focus too much on yourself, and not go out and donate your time to a soup kitchen something else, you lose touch of why we are even here. What is our meaning in life? What is our value? It's to each other. I mean, that's the whole reason we're here. If you were the last man on earth, who are you talking to? Why do you have any relations with anybody? You know,
and especially doing things like that really does help build your self-worth. Things like that, which will, when you've got a good feeling of self-worth and the fact of like, no, I do good things. It's hard to listen to that negative voice that they are using to try to beat you down.
Yes, I know we're running over time.
No time.
I typed out probably 1,000 statements, which I call condensed evil. And I published a portion of it on Facebook, and surprisingly, they didn't, since I put it in quotes and told them what my research was about, they didn't, put me in Facebook jail.
Yeah.
But it's the most evil words that humans can possibly think of calling each other. And this is how the breakdown scripts work with the V2K, Voice of God weapons, and et cetera. The mind heterodynamic weapons. And it gives the non-TI an example of, you heard this 24 hours, how it would completely destroy you and break you down.
And, no, no different than the demeaning talk that they use 24/7 to break somebody in Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, or even in boot camp in the military. You're a worm until you're part of us, you know.
Until you're worthy to be with us. You're a maggot. Absolutely. And it does either unify you or break you. One of the two.
You will either
wash out or you will belong.
You will bifurcate is the word I use, but you will split one way or the other. You must choose a side.
And you know, even that once again leads to a whole row of which is where you get into the situation that they did with Nuremberg, things like that, where people were following orders. It sounds so horrible, sounds so horrifying, but once you have bifurcated your mentality in that way, it can be hard to do otherwise. I mean, the experiments that were done in Stanford show that, like, within a week, those kids in that prison experiment went off rails.
Yeah, I did my own experiment. I wanted to see how easily... No, nothing bad happened. I wanted to see how easily it would get common citizens to follow my orders, even though I told them what the experiment was about. Mm. And it was about a senator who was not going to vote, and this is actually... semi-true story, against stalking. And so I went to Craigslist and I said, I will pay you $14 an hour, car, radio equipment, and we're going to stalk this senator. And everyone, all you have to do is flash your lights or say a word to him as he goes by, and your job is done. You will be paid accordingly. By the end of the day, I had over 100 requests for jobs. So I'm just to make people do things that they may not know what they're doing or that is right, is actually quite easy to do. And I wasn't even speaking from my position of authority.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't wearing a white jacket or anything, and Milgram's experiment, type.
Oh yeah, and even the further experiments that were done with the psychological torture of somebody blindly through a wall that they keep pushing the button.
Yeah.
You know, and it's horrifying when you go to. I remember watching those in college for abnormal psychology and things like that, and just going, "Oh my God."
That's not abnormal, unfortunately.
No, that is the absolute norm. And that's the frightening thing that shows, is that, like, if you don't do this, you're the abnormal one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's even more troubling to sit back and think about, is, my God, I hope I'm abnormal.
Yes.
But if I'm put in that situation, what would my decision be? And you know, that goes down to so many levels. It goes down to false confessions and how you can be coerced into literally believing that you did something that you didn't do.
Exactly.
There's so many deep things that roots into. And
we've studied them all. Don't think our government's innocent.
by far not. By far not. Now, I want to thank you for taking the time, Doctor. It's always great talking with you and rabbit holing on these topics, because once again, the conversation is what's important. It's not a comfortable conversation. I don't like saying that my government has actively experimented on people. I don't like saying it. But it's true. And that is beyond targeted individuals, things like that. Like, there were numerous public experiments done on people.
And those are the ones that were discovered and exposed.
Yes, that we know about. Exactly. And so, if those are the ones that were discovered and exposed, imagine the ones that happened without our knowledge. Imagine the ones that happened in the walls of prisons to people.
And today, People always think, no, we're good today. We would never do those things.
You know? Okay.
I want the public to know they go on today.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They go on today. No doubt. Once again, we have not shut down our operations in Cuba.
And that's
still open for business.
You know about. We have safe houses everywhere around the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we have black interrogation sites, all kinds of things. Most definitely. And that's why so much is done through contractors. Because once that's done, now there is a full layer of plausible deniability.
That's correct.
So, yeah, these are hard conversations. They aren't fun to have once again, but.
Thank you for covering them. I appreciate them.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk about them because it's not easy. And it's good to know that there are good people like you out there, good, knowledgeable people that are fighting the good fight, are trying to stop this, are trying to create technologies to help circumvent the technology and help break the pattern.
It's a vicious cycle. You know, I'm improving on technologies. Will they be used for good or evil? I have good intentions for them.
Yeah.
But like fire, you can burn down villages or you can heat food and keep warm, you know.
I got 8 hammers. I could either build a house or go out and cause a whole bunch of damage.
Exactly.
You know, it's all my decision and what I put into it. And that's just it. It's what we decide to put into it, folks. And
or is it your decision?
That's the frightening part. Is it your decision? Man, talk about bringing it back full circle. Doctor, thank you so much again for your time. Let everybody know where they can go to pick up their copies of not only How to Tame a Demon, but Project Soul Catcher as well.
Yeah. Amazon is the source, the worldwide books are. And there is a support group named PACTS, PACTS, that I think also sells my book to help fund their support organization.
Oh, so fantastic.
Those locations.
Yeah, awesome. Well, please do hold the line while we close things out. Once again, thank you so much for your very valuable time on this very, very important topic.
Thank you.
While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Dr. Robert Duncan, folks, make sure to stop on by the Curious Realm. Curious Realm is, of course, where you can find all of our declassified documents there in the knowledge vault, including the things that we were talking about tonight, MK Ultra, Operation Northwoods, everything else. That is curiousrealm.com/knowledge. You can also stop on by curiousrealm.com/store. Visit our new store with all kinds of merch as well as books from all of our guests, including the books by Dr. Duncan. His original work, The Matrix Decoded, is actively in our knowledge vault. So stop on by for your free download of that as well. If you are a targeted individual or experiencer of the paranormal, cryptids, if you're a government whistleblower yourself and would like to come to us, feel free to give our experiencer line a call. Our experiencer line is right there on our website. You can call us anytime, 512-298-3913 is the number. We will keep your voice anonymous if you like, but we would love to hear your story, present it to our experts here on the show, hopefully get you some answers. You can also stop on by curiousrealm.com/story and share your story with us, as well as pictures, video, audio evidence, anything like that. Share your experience of the paranormal, cryptid, or being a targeted individual with us, and we will try to get you some answers from our experts right here on the show. Thank you so much to everybody, as always, for tuning in. Keep your minds and hearts open, everybody. It's a tough world out there. We are up against so much as a society and humanity. It is up to us to change the world as we know it, not only for now, but for the future. So take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.